Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We are privileged to have with us today, for a full hour, a man who has devoted his life to the service of his country in the present phases of this long-running war for the free world. His name is Brigadier General Don Bolduc. He has been a member of the United States Army's Special Forces community for much of 33 years of active duty service, including in command positions, 10 tours in Afghanistan, 81 months in combat. He has been a police officer. He is these days an assistant professor at New England College and, among other things, a candidate for the United States Senate from his home state of New Hampshire. General Bolduc, thank you so much for all you have done for our country and are doing now for it, and for the chance to visit with you a bit about both on Secure Freedom Radio.
Well, thank you very much, Frank. I appreciate it. And my best to you and your listeners.
Thank you. I wanted to give you a chance just to sort of flesh out a little bit more who you are, what makes you tick, how it was you came to serve in the United States Army with great distinction. Starting out, I guess you qualify as a Mustang, sir, having been an enlisted man initially and rose through the ranks to Brigadier General. Just give us a little bit of this context, because we got some specific things that we want to drill down with you on in terms of what you're doing now that obviously draw on all of that experience, very helpfully so.
Born and raised in Laconia, New Hampshire. I've been a resident of New Hampshire my entire life. Registered Republican for 42 years here in the state. I learned work ethic, my values on our family farm in Guilford, New Hampshire. Very proud of that background. Service was part of our in our family's DNA. So I started serving as a police officer for a short period of time, and then went in the military. From private to sergeant to lieutenant, and had the honor to serve as a brigadier general and command at every single level in combat and outside of combat, and very proud of that opportunity, very honored to have it. I lost 72 service members on active in Afghanistan and in Africa, the combination of the two there. And everything I do every day is to honor their memory. It's my why. In addition to that, a big part of my why is my family. My wife, Sharon, we've been married for 32 years. We have three boys. I have three grandchildren. And I am very focused in my belief in God and my belief in family, my belief in community, and how strong communities build a strong nation.
Not least, I think it's fair to say you have another very strong belief, and that is in the oath that you took to support and defend the Constitution of the United States. That is, of course, something that everybody in the government takes at one point or another, but it's, I know, particularly heartfelt by you, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that, because it really helps set the stage for the conversation that I want to have with you about a very important letter that you and now, I believe, some 160 other general officers, flag and general admirals, generals in the Army, in the Marine Corps, in the Air Force, like yourself, and so on, signed out recently. And talk a little bit about the Constitution and the role it has played in your life and what makes you tick as well.
Sure. Well, first of all, two oaths in my life, right? One to my country, one to my wife. I've not violated either one of them, and I will not violate one of them. They are what is, you know, a huge part of my life and my background and what drives me. You know, the idea of protecting our nation, from all enemies, foreign and domestic. I took that oath a very long time ago. It remains wrong now. And I may be retired, but I took that oath for life. And when I see our nation in trouble, when I look at what our nation is experienced today, and I look at some of the environments that I was sent to by our country, I see the same things happening here, the same kind of insurgency type methods being used to our fundamentals of our Declaration of Independence, our principles and our values, our Constitution and our Republic, to a socialist, Marxist government. And we have to do the right thing and stand up. I know that will come at a cost because people will call us names, but, you know, that's okay. I know we've been referred to as wingnuts. That's the best they got, right? They can only come back and call us names because we are right. We wrote is based on fact. There are, you know, 12 points that are hugely important inside this letter that should give all Americans pause. And it started 50 years ago. And if I were to run an insurgency, sir, I would do the same thing. Remember, insurgency is the long term. You don't have to do these overnight. These are things where you plant the institutions with people and beliefs that are contrary to that. And over time, you get to take these over. So this is a reckoning for us here in America. And I'm not using hyperbole and I'm not trying to scare people. No. I'm trying to bring back self-determination initiatives and this don't tread on me attitude that America had to create the country that we have and not let it go to the wayside to demonstrated type governments that don't work and that will only undermine our freedoms.
This is the subject to which we will turn after a short break. General, we've got to see if we can improve the quality of our communication here a little bit, but the points that you're making here is coming across loud and clear, and that is you have devoted your life in the uniform of the United States Army, the Green Beret specifically, to defending that Constitution of ours against enemies, foreign and domestic, and specifically learned in the course of all of that, the tradecraft that some of those enemies, whether they're foreign or domestic, are clearly using against us now for the purpose of taking down our country. This is a subject to which you and your comrades in arms have turned this very important letter into, I think, a rallying point. And we're going to talk about some of the things that you've identified as part and parcel, not just of, you know, affronts to our Constitution, challenges to our freedoms, but as mortal threats, peril, as you put it, to the country we love. And we're going to go through it in detail, and I'm so privileged to have the chance to do so with you as one of the important signers of this letter from Flag Officers for America. And people can see the letter in its entirety and the list of signers at Flag Officers number 4, America.com. General Bullock, we will be right back with a drill down on the contents of that letter and the most important takeaways for every single one of our listeners and Americans more generally. And we're very delighted to have the chance to do that with you. We'll be right back with much more with Brigadier General Don Baldock.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back, and we are visiting for this full hour, I'm privileged to say, with Brigadier General Don Baldock, United States Army retired, now a candidate for the United States Senate in New Hampshire, but for our purposes, particularly importantly, one of the co-signers of a letter from Flag Officers for America that is making waves, I think it's fair to say, in Washington and across the country, because the general and his colleagues, the co-signers, have very squarely laid out what is afoot at the moment and why it is a mortal peril to our country. And General, I just wanted to give you a chance, before we get into some of the details, to set the stage for us. You and your co-signers talk about a contest between two groups of supporters of very different philosophies, political philosophies, ideologies, call it what you will. Characterize the contest, if you would, sir.
So, sure. I think it goes back to Eugene Debs, who, you know, created the Socialist Party here in the United States. Certainly, he is the inspiration behind Bernie Sanders, AOC, and many others. And their version of Marxism and socialism and how that should be articulated here in the United States by full government control, removing God from the public sector, replacing our education with ideology, undermining our communities by taking less and less emphasis off the importance of the family inside our community, making the communities weaker by taking everything away from them and giving them everything to them and setting things up. They needed some things to do that. They have had those things, over the last 50 years. They have reshaped two generations of young Americans' way of thinking by using the economic crisis during the Obama administration as an example of why capitalism is bad. And it's just they're replacing our governmental systems. They've created this divisiveness between our political parties. They have empowered big tech to censor people. They have taken corporations and empowered them to the extent that they control the national media, and that combination with big tech silencing people and then, you know, overtaking the narrative, which is very dangerous. And so Americans, they don't get the truth. And then supplanting our education with not telling the truth and now putting racism inside the curriculum in our schools. This whole process of political takeover, economic takeover, changing our society, changing our culture. I mean, that's what they're doing. And they've been doing it now 50 years, and they have a doctrine to do it, and they're following it. And what do we have? We have the Constitution.
Let me just interrupt because you've laid out a very rich table here for us to go through in detail. Let me just ask you, you were on Steve Bannon's television program, War Room Pandemic, with me and two of your colleagues, General Gary Heller, I've got that right, Harrell, and General Jerry Boykin, regular here at Secure Freedom Radio. And one of the things that you said, which really, I think, burned in my memory, was as you went through the kind of litany you just did, you made a comment to the effect that this is the way I would take down a country's government if I were doing that. This is the playbook. This is not accidental. This is part of a, as you say, a doctrine, but really a design, whether it's Marxist in character initially, or whether it's Leninist or Maoist, or the cumulative effect of these socialist / Marxist / communists' history of violent insurrections and governmental, overthrows, revolutions. And you're talking about it happening in our country. And I guess I would ask you to just start in earnest on this question of two generations of school children in our country, from the youngest ages on through college, have been subjected to a steady diet of this kind of indoctrination and subversive brainwashing, really, to hate our country and so on. Talk a bit about that, if you would, as a feedstock for everything else.
Yes. Yeah, so, we saw it in Germany. The education system there caused them to completely abandon their history and be embarrassed by it, as opposed to taking history and using it to improve the future. They use it in the present to undermine and criticize their own nation. And that is happening here in the United States. And we see community level. We see it in our military, and how people, you know, there are a lot of Americans out there that say thank you very much for your service, and we appreciate that. But there are also a lot of Americans out there, you know, that aren't willing to serve, and I think that is a indictment on the society, in a takeover, right? Controlling who goes in, controlling who doesn't go in, and now trying to control those that are there, controlling our police.
You're talking about the inside the military of the United States, and let's just turn to that, because one of the things that is a very important point of profound disagreement with the policies of the current administration that is evident in this letter from Flag Officers for America is the politicization of the United States military, and it's being subjected to this so-called critical race theory and training. Talk a little bit about how that fits into this revolutionary model and program.
Well, sure. If you shape your military in such a way that it no longer is subscribing to the Constitution, to the oath of office, and you are weeding out those people that do hold those values and do connect those values to our God-given rights and principles as articulated in our Declaration of Independence, then you are going to shape a military that is no longer going to stand for freedom and liberty and is going to stand for promoting the, you know, socialism and Marxism and the undermining of that particular of our government. And that's what happens. We are supposed to be, I get it, the military has its own politics, and I understand that. Hell, I wouldn't have made it to general officer if I didn't understand it. But the bottom line is that, you know, we can't be used as a political instrument. We belong to the American people. And the real danger is the commander-in-chief. The commander-in-chief controls us. And Congress is supposed to be the ones that detail whether or not we get, you know, where we go and we go to war. But, you know, that has been very, very much diluted, and those responsibilities are being diluted. And now you're going to dilute the military, and you're going to put people in the military that are going to that are not going to stand by the Constitution. You know, we are the most respected profession in our country, year after year after year. And it's not because we subscribe to, you know, politicians, career politicians' view of the world. It's because we follow our oath.
And you're imbued, if I may say, sir, with the values of our Constitution and, you know, the freedoms that, as you say, it guarantees. Let's just, again, spend a minute on this, because since you published your letter, a very impressive younger officer by the name of Lieutenant Colonel Matthew Lohmeyer has become a kind of, well, poster boy for the phenomenon you're just warning about, namely a young man who deeply understands. I mean, he's self-taught, but impressively knowledgeable about Marxism. And when he was ordered by the Secretary of Defense, along with the rest of the military, to, you know, be alive to the danger of extremism in the ranks and to help root it out, he used his knowledge of Marxism to point out that that's one of the extremist things that's going on in the military today. And he has now been relieved of his command for writing a book and talking about a book that warns that the Marxists are inside the wire of the U.S. military. Give us your thoughts on that, if you would, sir, quick.
Oh, sure. I have already put a press release out in support of Lieutenant Colonel Lohmeyer and his actions. And I'm proud that he did stand up, because, you know, they're not going to say it's Marxism. They're not going to say it's socialism. But anybody that, you know, is, you know, has common sense and critical thinking is going to go, okay, this is exactly what it is. They're not calling it that, but the outcome is going to be that. And he stood up.
He did stand up, and let me just wrap this up because we got to take a short break, General. He stood up, and he's been punished for it, and is likely to lose, you know, the brilliant career that he had had up to that point in the United States military as part and parcel of an effort to purge people like him from the armed forces, and as you say, sort of repopulate our military with people who are not going to support and defend the Constitution, but are going to support and defend and perhaps help implement the Marxist Revolution. This is a topic to which we'll return with General Don Bolduc, United States Army retired and candidate for the United States Senate from New Hampshire, on the other side of this very short break. Stay tuned.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are speaking with a former distinguished veteran of the United States Army, a former police officer in the native state of New Hampshire, his stomping ground where he is currently running for the United States Senate. We're talking with Brigadier General Don Bolduc, United States Army retired, not about elections and all that, but we're talking with him about our country, its condition, its prospects, especially seen through the prism of an enormously important letter that he and now 160-some general officers, all retired, wrote recently as an open letter, a sort of cri de coeur, I think you might call it, in France. And the French have, by the way, issued their own letter, a number of their general officers. But General Bolduc, I did want to just say, you are standing for election. You clearly appreciate the importance of elections to the functioning of our constitutional republic. Talk a little bit about what seems to me, and evidently to you and your colleagues as well, to be a real threat to free and fair elections in this country in the form of what Democrats in the Senate and House have been talking about, the so-called For the People Act. It's been described as the For the Corrupt Politicians Act, which I think is more apt. But talk about the risks that you see there, and how does this fit into the Marxist playbook to sort of co-opt and take over and exploit electoral processes as part of their revolutionary ambitions?
Sure. Well, it's, you know, one of the big tenets to undermine elections. Without fair and honest elections that accurately reflect the will of the people, what do we got? We got nothing. Our republic will be lost. Our democracy will be lost. I served in many countries in the world where we helped them with their election integrity and their voter integrity. You know, all the Arab Spring countries, Afghanistan, we've done it in Iraq, we've done it in many, many, many places in the world. And, you know, it used to be that the United States was the gold standard for elections. That's not the case anymore. And it's unfortunate because we should be. And
why is it, you know, that we're not, as you see it, sir?
Because we don't follow our own election integrity requirements that we place on other countries. Like, for instance, Tunisia. Tunisia had an election in 2019. And, you know, up to that, you know, I worked with that country for a couple years. My guys did, to set the standard and to set up processes for fair elections. We sent observers, the UN sent observers, there were counters there and everything. And we required them to have a national voter ID. We required them, to have a number of the things that the Democrats, the progressives, the people now in the United States call voter suppression. Well, in order for Tunisia to get our aid, they had to subscribe to the requirements of proper registration, proper accountability, proper counting, voter IDs. And if we do that in this country, according to the same people that that passed the laws for us to help Tunisia, whether it was military, you know, whatever kind of aid, it's voter suppression here, but it's voter integrity there. You see what I'm saying?
I do, big time. Yeah, and it sheds light, importantly, on the prospect that those who are now trying to claim this is all voter suppression are seemingly about to try to pull a bait and switch, having failed, it seems, with this H.R. 1, S.1 bill. They're said to be now looking at seeing if they can't get a kind of Eric Holder-style Justice Department decision to enable these voting fraud arrangements and other shenanigans. And that must be fought as well, General. I'm sure you agree.
It must fought.
Let me turn, if I may.
People do not have faith in the system, our voting system. We're in huge trouble, and it's about the people. I was told the other day in an interview that, you know, it really doesn't matter. You know, people really don't matter here. You know, it's what, you know, Congress wants. The Congress should be working to establish, well, not with this, you know, Corrupt Politicians Act. No, the people do matter. And that's what we've gotten away from. And that's what Marxist, that's what their whole program is, to take people's authority away from them. Right. And our whole Constitution is based on that. You serve at the pleasure of the people. Our government is designed for the people, by the people, of the people. Right. Oh, come on. It's so basic, it makes my head hurt. But yet every time we turn around, we're violating this. And let me tell you, when we don't do the right thing in our election laws here and we don't have good election law integrities, the rest of the world laughs at us, and it endangers the civilians and military personnel we have working in other countries, because people are like, you know, hey, we don't have to listen to you Americans. You don't even do the right thing in your own country. That's another serious issue that we have. We put people's lives.
Yep. General, we're going to run out of time before we run out of things to talk with you about. So let me move along. The letter issued by Flag Officers for America has a very important passage, and I'm going to read the whole thing because it is succinct, but it really makes the point powerfully. It says, China is the greatest external threat to America. Establishing cooperative relations with the Chinese Communist Party emboldens them to continue progress toward world domination. Militarily, economically, politically, and technologically. We must impose more sanctions and restrictions to impede their world domination goal and protect America's interests. That's, as I say, powerful an exposition of let's be clear, the mortal threat to our country of our time. It is also a Marxist operation, as you know, and it is also, we have lots of reason to believe, actively collaborating with the Marxist revolutionaries in this country, helping them, you know, mount their subversive campaigns here. Give us your flavor from the perspective of a distinguished veteran of the United States Army's Special Operations Forces as to the nature of this Chinese communist threat. Do we have our hands around it, and are we indeed addressing it appropriately?
No, we're not addressing it appropriately. We have too many people in our government, from the top in Congress, everywhere else, that are Chinese Communist Party sympathizers. You know, we can't hold them accountable here in this country for crimes they commit in our securities exchange arena. They're in our universities with their spy network, with their Confucius institutes. You know, it's you know, they are undermining us and have been for many years in Afghanistan. They're doing it in Syria and Iraq. They're waiting for their opportunity to be able to support Hamas and Iran indirectly against us and our great partner and ally Israel, who we should be giving, sending messages to the Chinese and everybody else that Israel is our greatest ally. The relationship there is hugely important to us, and you need to stay out of it. And we're going to help Israel politically, economic, diplomatically, and militarily if we have to. It's that important against Hamas, an Iranian terrorist arm, and
perhaps Iran itself, heavens knows. General, let me just ask you this. You spoke very powerfully a little while ago about the playbook. The Chinese have a term for the playbook. They call it unrestricted warfare. And I'm just wondering, as you look at the kinds of things that are done to overthrow governments, are they missing any bets? Is it possible that they've overlooked any line of attack and are not using it against us? Or is it to the contrary, that we're engaged in a people's war against this country? They are engaged in a people's war, as they call it, against this country involving a whole of society effort to take us down.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, I read Unrestricted Warfare when it came out, I believe in 1999. I have a copy of it. I reference it. I use it in my classes when I teach about Africa and about Afghanistan. At New England College, they are following unrestricted warfare to a T. It's about political warfare for them. It's about information operations. It's about getting at our critical infrastructure. It's about undermining our relationships in the UN. They're very successful at doing that. It is about undermining our relationships with other allies, particularly, African nations. They are doing exactly everything that they're doing is so that they can be the world superpower, not only dominate the United States, but ruin the United States. And
General, what would the world look like if they succeeded? How horrific would that be for, well, Americans, to say nothing of others?
Well, let's just say that Western democracies would become a thing of the past. It would be history. That should scare everybody because it is the United States that gives many, many people in this world hope, right, and faith. And if the United States goes away, if the United States is no longer able to be able to use our republic, our democracy, our freedoms, our values, stave off countries like China, who are just looking to dominate countries and people, we're going to be in big trouble. This is why we're in peril. And right now, we have a government that's willing to ignore them and work with them and give them access and do everything that they need to do. So they're really not even going to have to fire a shot.
Right. Enabling them, I think, is the key verb there. General, we have to take a last break, and we will be right back with more with General Don Baldick about energy security and the degree to which what this administration is doing in that arrangement, that portfolio, is greatly intensifying the threat we face from enemies, foreign and domestic. That and more straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back to the fourth and final installment of this incredibly interesting and, I hope, really impactful conversation with an American military hero who is now bringing the insights of his experience fighting Marxists around the world to bear to try to assure that they do not succeed in taking down our country here at home. His name is Brigadier General Don Baldick, United States Army retired, a former special operator, Green Beret, in the United States Army, a man with extensive combat and command experience and a very clear-eyed assessment of the kinds of threats that we are facing from enemies, foreign and domestic, taken right out of the playbook of the Marxists who have been overthrowing and destabilizing and undermining and subverting governments around the world for decades. General Baldick, again, thank you so much for your time in this full hour of important, illuminating conversation. I did want to ask you about energy security. You mentioned infrastructure a moment ago. We've had the Colonial Pipeline shut down by hackers, we're told, from Russia. We've had evidence that the grid is highly vulnerable, notably in Texas back in February. There are reports that the Chinese, about whom we were just speaking, have as many as 200 to 300 high-voltage transformers in the backbone of our electric grid, giving them an opportunity through cyber or other means to take it down at will, I fear. Against this backdrop, the Biden administration seems determined to actually reduce our energy security. What's up with that, and what are the implications if they persist?
So, allowing foreign countries to have access to some of our most sensitive, national security, elements is just unbelievable. And it's just another way in which, we are going to fall prey to, it's just another enabling factor, right? Energy is hugely important, and we must be energy independent. And if we are not energy independent, then we are going to be in huge, huge trouble. And, President Trump made sure we were energy independent. And everything that this administration is doing with their Green New Deal ideas, transitioning to renewable energies without the proper technology and without the backup of fossil fuels and nuclear energy and so on and so forth, we are going to be in huge trouble. Where, I've been in countries where you have unreliable energy and unreliable electricity. It is not fun, right? It's terrible. It's a terrible plight. We might think it's, now in our society, this, having energy and having electricity and having heat and all these things, are pretty much a necessity, when at one point in our country, it was pretty much, a luxury. Well, now it's a necessity. And if we don't have these and we are not energy independent, then we become a very, very vulnerable country. And it's just another way, Frank, to control us. Oh, lights on, lights off. You got gas, don't have gas. You have electricity, you don't have electricity. Oh, you can have this car, but you can't have that car. We want to get rid of cows because of methane. We want to control what you eat. We want, all this energy security is tied to the very fabric of our culture, right? And we can't allow it to happen. And what they're doing is they're setting it up so that it does happen. And it's only going to benefit our enemies.
Yep. One of the really striking contrasts between Donald Trump's presidency and that of Joe Biden, in addition to the very different attitude towards energy, is, of course, our border security. And General, it's now, I think, beyond dispute that this policy approach of the Biden team is impacting not just border states, but that, as a practical matter, all of our states are border states. We're all being affected by the vast infusion of numbers of illegal immigrants, many of whom we have no idea who they are, let alone why they've come here. Talk a little bit about how this fits into the Marxist overthrow strategy as well.
Sure. If you have weak borders and a poor immigration system, you are going to be able to infiltrate all different types of things inside a nation that will undermine that nation. Just like, think about the drugs. And China's involvement with the drugs and the fentanyl problem here in New Hampshire, 95% comes from the border. Human trafficking is a huge problem. Weapons are a huge problem. And, by the way, trying to restrict our Second Amendment rights and gun owner rights only facilitates that, because then, the people that need guns to protect themselves won't have them. Only the people that will do bad things with guns are going to have them. They're setting this, they're setting the whole thing up. So border security is huge. Everywhere I have served, border security has always been a top priority of the countries. And I will use the country of Cameroon, who in 2011 had the worst border security off the Gulf of Guinea that you could possibly have. There were thousands of problems, land, air, and sea, with their border. And they asked us for help. We went in there to help. And by 2016, thousands of border incidents went down to three border incidents. And that's land, air, and sea. With what we were able to set up with the proper infrastructure. And oh, by the way, this didn't violate anybody's rights, right? This was sound technology, air, land, sea, layered, good immigration policies, good security policies. It cut down on drugs, it cut down on weapons, it cut down on piracy all across the board. I know how to do this. I worked the border as a young captain. I've worked in policy in the Pentagon at the highest levels. I've worked overseas helping borders. The biggest issue is refugees. And what is being done on our border right now is criminal. It's inhumane. And it's just wrong. And it's a huge national security issue.
I agree. General, we've only got a couple minutes left, but I want to use it to ask you to hearken back to your days as a police officer in New Hampshire. One of the things that we're being told by those on the left, the revolutionary Marxists of Black Lives Matter organization, among others, is that we've got to, you know, defund and dismantle the police. I'm wondering whether, as with the United States military, your sense of this is, as of mine, that they're not interested really in getting rid of the police. They just want to depopulate it of people like you, patriots, people who would enforce and defend the Constitution, with people who would, as I said earlier, support and defend the revolution. Is that what's really going on here, as well as the sort of racial overlay that's a Marxist technique for dividing and conquering us?
Yes. So let's cause problems in our city with race. Let's focus that on the police. Let's discourage the police to the point where we have people that we need retiring, seeking early retirement. And then let's make sure that we don't educate our kids properly so that they have absolutely no interest or can't even pass the entrance exam to get in. And so that's exactly what they're doing. They're controlling, forcing the right people out, not preparing our society to develop the right people to go in, and then putting other restrictions on folks so that they can't do their job, because if they do their job, they're going to lose their job and their families are going to be negatively affected. So what have I done? This is what I've done. I have applied to Hampton Police Department as a part-time police officer. I've been conditionally hired, and I will start the part-time police academy here in New Hampshire in July. I will graduate in November, and then I will be out on the streets because, you know, Frank, I'll be damned if I'm going to allow their plan to work. I'm going to go in there, roll up my sleeves at 59 years old, and work the streets in, you know, Hampton, New Hampshire, to provide safety and security for our communities that is being put in jeopardy today.
You may have something else to do in November. We'll see. But for the moment, thank you for the service you've rendered for our country thus far, sir, and that you are rendering these days, among other things, as a flag officer for America and a prospective police officer in your state of New Hampshire, among other roles. God bless you, and thank you for sharing with us your insights and those of your colleagues in this most challenging moment when we have to understand the nature of the threats we're facing, as well as learn from our own experience and lessons of history how we deal with them. God bless you, General Bullock. We look forward to talking with you again in the future. Keep up the great work, my friend, and we look forward to talking with the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for
listening. You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.